You are now listening to Bigfoot and Beyond, featuring the OG bad boys of Bigfoot, the Dr. Heckle and Mr. Jive of Squatchology, the Chip and Dale of Bigfoot, and I'm not talking about the cartoon. Please welcome your hosts, the Bigfoot celebrity couple, Biff Klobo, better known as Cliff Berrickman and James Bobo Fay.
You've heard my story a million times. I'm sure everyone listening has heard it too. My first sighting, I had that sighting back in 2001. What happened was I left my night scope in town and my good buddy was going surfing up north. And so I called him and he actually picked it up and brought it up and dropped it off. And while he was there, he went with me up on the hillside. And when I saw the Sasquatch, he was there. We passed the night scope back and forth, but he couldn't go public before because he was just graduated with a nursing degree and he was looking for jobs and, you know, he didn't want that stigma on his, you know, resume saying this guy says he saw Bigfoot. So he kept it on the radar, but now he said he'll come forward and tell his side of the story. And so we have EH on the phone with us tonight, Eric.
Eric. Hi. Eric, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Hi, Cliff. Hi, Bobo. Fantastic.
So we'll consider this a fact-checking episode with Bobo, because I've heard this story so many times. It'll be nice to get another perspective on it.
You know, it was a powerful, powerful event in my life, for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what. We've heard Bobo's version. In fact, I think that we've heard it on the podcast, Bobo. Am I correct?
Yes.
I think we did, right? So since that's available in a previous episode, why don't we start from the beginning of Eric's story? Like, what were you doing when Bobo gave you the emergency call, and then how did you react? Fill us in on your perspective of this whole thing.
I know I've talked to Bobo in the past year, and I know that our accounts vary slightly, but overall the story is basically the same. I was actually in my house in Arcata cooking some abalone up, and I get a call from Bobo saying that there is some extra room on the research team. Would I be interested in coming up to spend the night? And I jumped at the chance. And I don't remember being a night scope. I think the night scope was already there, Bobo. I picked it up. Okay, I don't refute that too much because my memory, you know, is maybe not too exacting. But so I drove up to. Can I name the site where we went to, Bobo?
Sure.
It was up on the Johnson's Road, up in the Klamath River Basin. And I know the Johnson Road very well. It was off to the left, off went to get up on top of the ridge. And it was early evening. Sheriff John was there. Manny was there and Bobo. When I pulled up, Manny was starting to broadcast Bigfoot calls. We were actually on a logging road in a clear cut. It was not the biggest clear cut, but it was a good size one, probably 100 yards by 100 yards. And the road kind of cut towards the bottom of it. Manny started to broadcast some calls on a speaker system that he had, which was absolutely terrifying because, you know, Bobo and I climbed up to the top of the clear cut. We had his night vision. We had a walkie-talkie with John. And Bobo also had a good-sized gun, some kind of revolver in his back pockets. I remember being up on top of this clear cut, looking down at those guys. They were broadcasting the signals or the calls. And I think Sheriff John was having a radio discussion with Art Bell, if I'm not mistaken.
It was Jeff Rentz.
Jeff Rentz, excuse me. Thank you. And Manny would broadcast these calls out, and we'd sit and let it be quiet for a little bit. And we had these night goggles that were not that good. And we were on the eastern side of the coastal ridge. So we had a lot of fog, a lot of clouds coming over the top of the ridge, and it was obscuring our moonlight a lot. So a lot of times when Bobo was looking, you really couldn't see all that much. So it kind of hampered some of that. But at one point in time, John was on the phone with Jeff, and he started hearing some commotion down below the car. And that's when he told Bobo, he's like, do you guys see anything? And Bobo was like, no, we don't see anything yet. And he kept doing the interview with Jeff, and he kept interrupting, saying, no, there's something down here, and it's really, really big. It's moving stuff. At one point in time, Bobo happened to see something. John was getting really quite anxious from what I remember. He was kind of acting, he was fearful. It was something big was down there. Bobo handed the goggles to me. I couldn't see much. And then I did see some movement. It was doing kind of this funny kind of dance, if I recall correctly. But it was right around that time when what we saw made these three guttural noises that were extremely powerful. It's very guttural, very, very deep in its tone. And what struck me so powerfully was that we were about 120 yards away from what we saw, what this creature was doing. But Bobo and I both felt the vibration off of this grunting. It was like, ooh, ooh, ooh. It was really fast in succession, and it was extremely deep. And we felt the vibration off it. And we both went, whoa! We started yelling expletives and whatnot. And it was at that time that the thing, we don't know, but we didn't have any more sightings from it. We stayed up there a couple more hours broadcasting more calls, and nothing came of it. So Bobo and I came back down to the cars. We shared our experiences. We slept there that night, really saw nothing else. The next morning we went down and did some investigating to where we think we saw it. There was one landmark that we noticed was kind of a tree snag that was at the base of the clear cut that we kind of, the creature that I saw was about as tall as the snag. And the snag was at least probably 10 or 12 feet tall. It was huge. We didn't see any footprints around there, which was odd, but that was pretty much how I remember it.
Mm-hmm. So before this event, you lived in Humboldt. You probably thought about Sasquatches occasionally. Like, what was your take on the whole subject at that point?
Oh, I mean, we all knew Bobo was a big advocate and a big enthusiast. And I've actually spent some time in the Humboldt State Library over some of those lousy cold weekends and sat in there and read a bunch of stories.
Yeah.
I had a friend visiting, and we spent a good 3 or 4 days one time just looking through all the different stories of Bigfoot. And, it was really eye-opening hearing more of the accounts from local, politicians, local respected ranchmen. I also had a degree in religious studies at the time, and I did a lot of studying with a lot of the Native American medicine men and women. And I would often ask them about Sasquatch, and they would all answer to the affirmative, like, yes, this is very true. They totally exist. And then I started asking people just around town, people that I would meet like at the local pool and ask them about if they'd ever seen Sasquatch. And some people came out and said yes. And one of the more riveting stories was about a rancher who he does mule trains up in the Trinities and Marble Mountains. And he told me a really powerful story. Anyways, that's my experience.
Yeah, they're definitely on your radar.
Yes.
And so when you actually laid eyes on it, now I've spoken to a lot of witnesses, obviously, over the years, and one of the common themes is that while they were looking at it, it was more of a processing thing, like, what the heck am I looking at? When you saw this, did you have to go through that mental gymnastics as well, or was it immediate and obvious for you?
Cliff, what I saw, I cannot say for sure. I mean, it was, again, the night vision goggles we had were poor.
Yeah.
The light, the moon was maybe maybe a little more than a quarter moon, so it wasn't the best conditions. And then the intermittent cloud cover was really obscuring our vision. What I saw was movement for sure. But what really struck me, and I'll never forget, was the sound. I've heard mountain lion. I've heard bear. I've heard howler monkeys. There was nothing I've ever heard that was like this. And that's something I come away with. I was like, this was, it, that was real.
Oh yeah, and the size of the thing, of course, and
yeah.
You mentioned something that I know Bobo's side of it, but you mentioned the little dance it was doing.
No one else saw this but me, and I in the morning time we woke up, we got out of the trucks, and we're talking, and we looked around, and I told them at that point I said, and the thing was doing this kind of dance. It was like almost like hopping from one foot to the other, and like his shoulders were going back and forth, up and down, kind of with the steps. And both, I mean, all the team members, John, Manny, and Bobo, all just went, whoa, that's like no ape behavior. And it didn't make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eric, I saw part of it, but it was definitely, it was more cloudy because it was between quarter, third of a moon. There would be breaks between the clouds where we could see real well.
And it's true.
I was being a little selfish since I didn't know when looking forever. I was like, this is my first thing. I'd grab the thing back from Eric. they weren't goggles. It was actually a scope. It was a Ukrainian scope.
It was a scope.
I don't know if you saw it. It went back and forth, but it would go between the snag and there was that other stump. Remember where the stump came to its chest area?
Uh-huh.
And it would walk back and forth between the stump and the tree snag.
At the time, I was terrified, you know. Mm. I was sitting next to Bubba, who, you know, is a solid dude. He's had some martial arts experience. He's a strong, agile guy.
He's a Jedi, too.
I don't know if you've ever seen Bubba surf triple overhead surf, but the guy rips. I mean, he surfs, but he's... I mean, at least he used to surf big radical surf and he would just tear it. And he had a gun in his back pocket. And even with all those things at my side, I'm like, this is nuts. We're just, what are we doing out here?
What was the exact date again, by the way?
May 26, 2001.
May 26, 2001. Nice.
I don't think I've ever included this part of the story, but back then I used to sleep on the ground outside.
Yeah.
And I made Eric let me sleep in the back of his truck, in the back of this little Toyota. I squeezed in the shell with him and slept next to him all night.
Safety in numbers.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's complete nonsense. It's actually just perceived safety in numbers because, you know. Two or four of you even do against something like this.
No, Dad. I mean, John. He had a gun, and it was in the car. No, it was in the trunk, and he was really getting animated, going, "Oh no!" And Bob was like, "Well, where's your gun, John?" He's like, "It's in the trunk," and it was like a feeling of dread, just like, "Oh no, dude! But what's that gonna do for you?"
You know, what's so funny is that I remember back at that time when this popped up on the internet, and I didn't know Bobo. I knew about John Freitas, and that's it. Uh-huh. I'm not sure Bobo was on my radar beyond just some random name I might have run across at that point. And I remember mm-hmm. clicking on this and listening to the broadcast on the, what is it, Jeff Rentz? Is that what you said?
Yeah,
I remember listening to the recording. It wasn't that same night. It was not that same night, but it was like a week or two or three afterwards, you know, not that long afterwards. And I just remembering, right. Sure, there's something in the bush. He happens to be on, you know, the radio program. Exactly. But there's all this supporting evidence for it now. And it's so funny to look back on that and mm-hmm. think how not only like, oh, yeah, that was real going on, but it ended up being, you know, like Bobo's like pretty much one of my best friends ever. So like his first sighting and, you know, who would have thought in 2020 would be talking about that event that I listened to and kind of thought, no, that's bull crap, you know, at the time.
That is pretty cool. That's great, Cliff.
We were on the radio with John when he wasn't on the. He had a bag, the old bag cell phone, you know, like in the old 1990 style bag phone. He had one of those, and so when they were on a commercial break from the Sightings radio show, we talked to John, and he's like, "What? It's growling and stomping the ground. Can you see it now?" We were like, Yeah, but we were too afraid to say it was because we're like, there's like, he had like 7 million listeners. And we're like, yeah, right. No one's going to believe this. This is such, like, how could it be that we're on a live radio show and we see My First Bigfoot? And so we were too, because we couldn't see it that well. Like, the detail was, it wasn't a good scope, but you could see enough to see that it was up on two legs. It was bipedal. And when totally. It went between the tree, when it went between the tree and the stump, it never dropped to all fours ever. And I mean, you couldn't see any detail other than like when it raised its arms a little bit. Like, I couldn't make out individual legs or anything. I just look like a, like, I remember at the time I said it looked like a shit brick house with a coconut on top. It was like this big, big blocky shape. And it never dropped. It just always stayed up, and it made those loud 3 grunt growl things that were just so deep and loud, which matched what I'd heard 5 days earlier when I had the living daylight scared out of me when I had that first encounter.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you know, I had the exact date, and I took the liberty of looking up the moon phase, because for anybody out there listening or whatever, when you're talking to a witness and they say some detail like that, whether it's weather, although weather's a little less predictable, but and moon phase, it's always good just to double check it to see. Well, for some people, it'd be like if they're lying, but I know you guys aren't lying. But it's also to see how well the memory serves. And for whatever it's worth, on May 26, 2001, it was a 15% moon. So it's almost a quarter. The next night, it actually was a quarter.
Okay.
So it's just whatever that's worth. So the 27th was 24%, and the 26th was at 15%. So you guys are right. There was some moon up, but not that much. And it had to be real dark, man. Holy smokes. Because it would have I don't know if it would have been rising or setting about that time, but at that whenever you were, but nonetheless.
It was really, really low clouds, like almost like fog. It was just above our heads. And
yeah, that coastal sort of stuff y'all get down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when the gaps came, there was definitely enough moonlight to see this thing. I mean, it was more that you could tell. It was more that we could rule out certain things. Like we could rule out elk, bear, person. Because of how huge it was. And then when we went the next morning and saw that it was, 9-10 feet tall, like close, right around 10 feet tall.
Yeah.
It was, that's when we just went, oh my God.
Now, if it's a 10 footer, even if it's a giant 8.5 footer, that's a massive thing or whatever, some big ass Sasquatch basically, up on the hill, that is almost certainly a big male. I think it's pretty safe to say that's probably not a female. It's probably in the bigger of the two as far as sexual dimorphism in the species goes. Do either of you have any recollection of somebody telling you a story of that or probably that Sasquatch in the Bald Hills area?
Oh, yeah.
Has that one been seen around before, basically?
Yes.
Bubba would know more than I for sure.
This guy, Kenny Graves, this time I had the Graves Ranch. It was like a 1,500 acre ranch up there, just a mile past Johnson Road on Bald Hills Road. Mm. And he saw one when he was on horseback down in that, just south of where we saw, really close to where I had my first encounter 5 nights earlier. But he saw it from horseback, and it walked by a bunch of landmarks. He was able to judge it. He said, he was looking at it like eye level and on his horseback, and it was downhill a little bit from him. He said, but from where it walked, he got a very accurate measurement of 9'6".
Yeah, because a big one like that, there wouldn't be 3 or 4 big ones like that, I don't think, at least in the current model of Sasquatch social behavior that I'm working with. That's probably the biggest one in the neighborhood, and he probably has a couple chicas around somewhere that he visits and hangs out with for booty calls. but yeah. And I imagine that one would have been seen a fair amount. That one probably is responsible for, a decent percentage of the local sightings, I would guess. But maybe not. I don't know.
Well, Bubba, you told me what alerted you and John was that a Native woman up on the ridge was having this Sasquatch come into her yard a lot, and she called up you guys, and you guys went to that site. Is that correct?
Yeah, she was driving by. She was in a little village down at the end, and she saw a smaller one walking.
And
was driving a rolled up piece of cardboard, and then a like a bright blue sweater, was dragging both of them, one in each hand, just dragging them along the ground as she walked across that exact spot. And due to the bad cell phone coverage, when I talked to John, I couldn't hear him very well. I thought he said it happened that day, but he told me it happened that day, exactly a year before. I thought it was that day, so I had jammed up there, and that's how I had the first encounter. And then I went back the next night after on the 21st, I had my first encounter. 22nd, I went back. 22nd, 23rd, I went back by myself. Nothing happened. And then the 26th is when we went out, and Eric joined us. Mm.
That time of year obviously produces, they're up there on Bald Hills that time of year at some, you know, somewhere roaming around doing their thing, whatever that is. And, and I think that's a good strategy, you know, going to a place, going to the exact place or, you know, within a mile or two of where a sighting happens on the same date is as good a strategy as any, I think, for getting close to a Bigfoot. They're clearly in the neighborhood for some sort of resource. So it's even more than a season, you know, an exact day. I mean, they don't, they don't keep calendars or anything like that, but they would be probably looking for the same resources year after year in the same areas, I would guess.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would think so. Oh my gosh. My wife just brought in the thing at Ben and Jerry's ice cream to me. Hi, sweetie.
Oh.
I love you more than ever now.
Well, I guess, Eric, I know you had a, you got a busy night tonight, so you
can. It's all good. No, I've really enjoyed this. And just to clear the record, I've never been reluctant to tell the story in public, regardless of my profession. It's just, I tell people all the time my story if they want to hear it, but, I've never been asked. So that's my pleasure.
I'm excited, man. I've been waiting for years to hear your side of it. You know,
right on, Cliff.
Well, I really have, because I've heard the story a lot. You know, I've heard Bobo tell it because I'm with Bobo often, and people ask, "Hey, tell me about your sighting," and he often tells the story. But I've always known there was another witness there, and it always was not unsettling to me. But there was a part of me that said, "Man, I really got to hear this," because again, as a Bigfoot researcher, if there's more than one witness at a place, you want to talk to them.
Sure.
Yeah, because and it's not like I don't trust Bobo at all, because I've been around Bobo long enough that even his most outrageous stories are based around his perception of actually what happened. So he's not a liar by any means. But anybody, you would want to subject their version of the story to the person who was with them at the time. Mm-hmm. So speaking to you has been a great, great pleasure to corroborate all of the details that Bobo has talked about over the years and said, yeah, man. It awesome. Really happened, and it happened pretty much exactly the way he said it. So
totally.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, Bobo had the night scope much longer than I did. So I kept wanting to get it, but I didn't want to ask him for it. Then he handed it to me, and I was like, oh, I don't really see anything. And then it kind of the I think the clouds opened up, and I got some light, and that's when I was able to see it.
Gift from
so
above.
Thank you, Bobo. Thank you, Bobo. I appreciate you handing that off to me.
Thank you, Bobo, for making the clouds part for your friend. Eric, I don't know if you know, but he's been blamed to have created floods before, floods and monsoons. So the clouds part seems like a small trick for this guy.
That's just to explain his pants, you know. I don't know what he has to do.
Right. I still am a little flooded.
Yeah, you know, that's the way to do it. If I'm humble, you got to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, CDH, thanks a lot for coming on tonight, brother. We appreciate it.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Cliff, it's nice talking to you. And
nice talking to you, man.
And Bubba, you're always welcome down here, man. Give us a call.
Sweet. Thank you.
All right, guys.
All right. Have a good night.
Wow. So I've been waiting a long time to talk to Eric, and I'm so glad you had him on. That was great to finally, and again, not that I don't believe you, man, but you know, there's two people there, there's two perceptions. So it was nice to have him corroborate all the stuff that you've said over the years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, of course it's always good to have a witness. Yeah. He would tell the story in public, but, when I was doing a few TV shows back then, they were like, hey, get that guy. And I'm like, oh man, he's just still, you know, he was looking for nursing jobs, and He didn't want to go like on TV, you know, doing it, but he works at pediatrics down at a major hospital, and he would tell the kids that he said that when Finding Bigfoot was on some of the kids would be watching and say, hey, I was with Bo when he had his first sighting, and they'd flip out, go, no way. And so, yeah, so he told the story, but just never like in any kind of media.
Yeah, no public sense, I guess, like in that sort of way, like a big public sense.
Right.
Well, that is really, really cool. Man, we should get John Freitas on sometime and talk about it with him, too.
You know, from talking to Eric and John and my own memories, it's really interesting to see how memories change and vary and perceptions and over time, how people's recollections can shift, like where you think, no way do I remember it all exactly perfect. And then you realize your memory can change over the years.
Yeah, they've done studies to show that the memory actually conforms to the story that one tells. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like gravy through mashed potatoes, you know? The first time you pour it, it finds its way down. But after that, the rivers are there, you know? So the gravy goes down the same lines. There's got to be a better metaphor, but you hear what I'm saying, man. Yeah. The more times you tell it, the more your memory grabs onto that. So we kind of settle into our memories over time, which is, you know, good for remembering them and bad for those you're trying to tell, because memory can change.
Right. Like Eric thought it was goggles, you know, but I know for sure it was scope, because I used it for like a year.
Sure.
Sure. I mean, that's just, it doesn't change the veracity of the story. It's just a example of how details can, like the, well, that's what the studies also show on memory, like, the main things will stay the same, but like detailed things like scope or binocular or binocular.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It also shows the, in my opinion, it shows the lack of dependability with the eyewitness reports of Sasquatch sightings, frankly. Right. And because, you know, me and my soapbox, right? I'm always complaining about something. And this past year, it was like, yeah, leave the stories behind. And this is partly why. The stories are great. They're story, but don't take them as gospel. Don't take the, you know, nobody, fundamentalism is hard to deal with on any level, right? And Bigfoot fundamentalism is tough too. I've seen researchers toss out perfectly good reports because some minor detail didn't match up to what they thought or what their expectation was, or said it, like said goggles and then said scope later would be one of these little tidbit examples. And I've seen solid investigators toss out the entire report about small discrepancies like that. So it's a shame.
Right.
It's a shame. I think a lot of good babies were thrown out with the bathwater over the years.
Yeah. Like Joe Bielart, I made my report to him because I wasn't in the BFR or anything back then. He took my report and wrote it down as I spoke to him. And he gave me a copy of it a couple of years ago when we were up on one of your expeditions. When Joe was there, he goes, hey, I found this going through my files. You know, I was like 15 years old, whatever. And I looked through it and I'm like, you know, my story, I thought my story hadn't changed one bit. I mean, it was minor, but there was a couple of things in there that I had said that was different, you know, that when I told the story as of now.
Well, that's why it's good to have friends who were there. I guess that's another good reason to not go Bigfooting alone, so you can verify the story later.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was being kind of a dick that night because I was definitely Bogarting the scope. I was, you know, like, give me that EH, you know, because I was so just, you know, when you've been looking for something for years and years and years and years, it's right there. You're like, you can get a little selfish.
Well, the fact that you gave him to it all, it was very big of you.
I had to, because he actually brought it up. And he had brought that abalone up there, and we think that's it was because when we went to the truck, we were wondering if that's why I went to the truck, because it was maybe going to try to grab that or something, because it was on top of the cab of the truck.
So the actual meat of the abalone, right? Not the shell.
Yeah, the meat.
Yeah.
It was very, very fragrant.
So when's the last time you heard about that specific Bigfoot up there?
You know, I haven't heard about it for a long time. I mean, people have said they've seen them around up there, but I haven't heard anyone say like a giant one like that in probably, I think the last one I heard was maybe 2 years after that.
Okay. What about before then? Like, how long were you hearing about that one before then?
I was hearing about the old one that was limping, that was all haggard and gray and balding and emaciated, patchy hair, looked like it was about to die. Then I heard about the female one, you know, maybe a 7 footer or something like that. Six, 7 foot, somewhere around there. And I'd heard a lot of stories about people having scary sounds and hearing roars and screams and growls, but not actual visuals on that big guy.
Mm. You know, it's one time when we were up there, and I couldn't tell you the year, although I might take a guess at 2007 or something, maybe 2008. You and I came down from Bluff Creek where we were Bigfooting. It's just one of those years, like you and I were out together for a week or two or something like that. And we went to that little that gas station in Orleans. You know, the garage connected to it. Yeah. And there was a, I think it was a Yurok guy, might have been Karuk though, a young gentleman working there. And we started talking about Bigfoot with him, some native guy anyway. And he told us straight out, he goes, "Hey, I know where that big one up on Bald Hills lives." And then he started saying, "Yeah, it lives in the top of this big redwood tree or something like that on private land somewhere." But I thought it was so interesting because I had heard your story by then. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, I know where that one big one on Bald Hills," which is certainly the one that you saw. I thought that was so interesting.
He said it had a nest like 200 feet up in this old growth tree. And I was, could be. I mean, I remember thinking, like, I don't know, man, because that bark's not that strong. Where a giant 1,000-pound-plus animal can hold on and not rip the bark out, you know?
Yeah. And of course, I'm wide open to them being in trees. Of course, I don't see why they wouldn't be. We have lots of reports of them jumping down from trees. But a big one like that, it'd be. I mean, I'm not trying not to underestimate them, of course, but. There's a lot of times when there's no branches for 50, 80 feet up in a lot of those trees.
Usually. That's what I'm saying. It's so far up on a old growth redwood to get to the lowest branches. I mean, sometimes it's like 100 feet. So I think it'd be totally obvious where it goes up and down. But he could. He also said he knew the rock where it laid out in sunbathed.
Oh.
Remember that? Now,
do you know where either of these places are?
No, I called him one. We got his number. I called him once or twice, and we said we'd go. We were trying to work out a time, and then I called him. I didn't hear anything from him for a while, and I called him back, and that phone was disconnected.
Yeah, just not enough hours in the day to go out Bigfooting with everybody who wants to go.
There was a lot of people saw that old one all within a mile of Johnson Road on Bald Hills Road, and always within no more than 50 yards from the road, and it would just. They said it was limping along and, you know, all sucked up. And when I had my encounter 5 minutes before Eric was there, I just always had a feeling that for some reason that was the one that did the knock when the big one came from the north where we saw it later.
Mm-hmm.
North on Johnson's when it came down to where we were, when it came into that tree line, there was a huge power knock from my 2 o'clock when that big one came in from my 9 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And I just always thought, oh, I bet it was that old shoulder. I just always, for some reason, thought it was him instead of, you know, that female one had been seen in there, the smaller one. It could have been her as well.
Yeah. Which brings up something I think a lot of people overlook. People think of Sasquatches as largely solitary, and that may or may not be true. Don't really know. But if they're knocking or calling or vocalizing, I mean, do you really think it's, I mean, we're out there trying to fool them into knocking back. Like, hey, we're a Bigfoot. We're, you know, knock back. If they're answering or doing anything like that, there's probably another one in the neighborhood. Otherwise, why would it be doing it? I mean, I don't think Bigfoots, you know, humans talk to themselves, but do Bigfoots knock to themselves? I doubt it.
Only the crazy ones.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I wonder if they hear knocking in their head when they have mental illnesses.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh, somebody came in the shop. This is like 3 months ago now, but someone came in the shop and said, "Oh yeah, my uncle has a picture of a Bigfoot." And I go, "Oh really? That'd be great to see." And she pulled it up on her phone or something like that. And it was a still from Letters to the Big Man or Letters from the Big Man or whatever that movie was.
And I was looking at it because it's a really good suit. That's one of the best suits in any movie, really. And I was looking at it, I go, God, that looks really familiar. And I had like boobs and the whole thing. And I go, that looks really familiar. Then it all clicked. I go, oh, that's that. And I told her, she goes, I don't know. My uncle said he got it. I don't think he, my uncle. And I said, well, you know what? Do me a favor. Give me your email address or something like that. And I went and found the exact scene in the movie. And sent her the frame from the movie, and I got to burst her bubble. And so I'm, you know, got to ruin her little part of her treasured memory of her uncle.
Which Cliff loves to do.
Oh my gosh. So I'm planning out my presentations. We both have gigs coming up, but I'm doing Squatch Fest in a couple of weeks. So I'm doing a new presentation for my, you know, the Cliff tour this year. And I don't know what I'm going to call it yet, but it's going to be either, I think it's going to be called either Cliff Burst Your Bubbles. Or what is that TV show? So-and-so Ruins Everything. Yeah, I think it's going to be like, so Cliff ruins everything and you should too.
I love it. I did get a lot of messages this year. Like Cliff's really been negative, you know, and I met him and he was rude to me about it. And I'm like, well, he's just sick of hearing stories. You know, yeah, they're just words, you know,
well, you know, I'm not sure I would say sick of hearing. In a way, I can see how that would be taken as such. But the thing is, I've become a larger advocate of the truth. You know, people are not children, and they shouldn't be treated as such unless, of course, they're children. So why not just give it to them straight? You know, like if I had cancer and I went to the doctor would have said, yeah, you know what, you've got a little bug. That wouldn't be a fair assessment. You know, I'd say, no, doc, you give it to me straight. It's like, all right, yeah, you got this. And it's going to really do a number on you. And I feel the same way about evidence because I'm an old, you know, jaded man. You know, I'm with the Bigfooters to get off my lawn now. But when somebody shows me something, you know, I can be polite and say, no, man, that's almost certainly just a play of shadows. Almost certainly a play of shadows. And it's just not so sorry. Oh, but you know, like whatever, it's there. Don't you see it? I see it plain as day. No, I don't see it. But you're being really hopeful about it, and that's cool. That's very optimistic of you. We need that kind of attitude in the world today. But no,
right? Yeah, I've been getting a lot of pareidolia pictures, but I did. Oh, I didn't tell you. Or yeah, wait, no, I didn't tell you. I think I left you a message maybe, but I got contact from the relative of a Border Patrol agent, and I got a still photo from a game cam, which looks fake to me, but I also got a clip, a thermal clip of a Bigfoot. Can't prove it's a Bigfoot. I mean, it's very far away. But the plant, it's the type of vegetation in it, was supposed to be 10 or 12 feet in height. And this thing was, judging by that, would have been 8.5 to 9.5 feet tall. And
do you see any limbs or anything, or is it a blob?
Yeah, you see the legs go, and I tried to send it to you, but I couldn't figure out how to, because it came to me in Facebook message, and my computer's back in the shop again right now, so I don't have a computer right now, which I'm supposed to get it back Friday or Monday, but when I get it back, I was just learning how to pull the, because I suck on the computer, mm-hmm. I'm learning how to pull that stuff, so I can send it to you, but the video clip, it's got all the official government data, like, like almost like a military type. Sure. It's got that all embedded in the video. So I got to figure out how to, because I'm not good at that stuff. I got to figure out how to blur out the date and all that kind of stuff. So that they can't, because the person said that they'd be able to identify the agent due to the records, but that two suits came and did interview him about the, because he turned it in and said, hey, this thing's over 8 feet tall. We got it on thermal. And supposedly there's a picture that goes with it from a game camera. And it looks fake to me, but we'll see. I have B. Mills is one of the people looking at the photos for me right now.
Oh, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. That's great.
Yeah, when I get my computer back, did you get the still photo, the one game cam photo?
I don't think so. It seems like that would stand out. I don't remember getting any emails from you for a while.
Okay. I thought I sent it to you, but maybe it didn't go through or something. But anyways, yeah, that was interesting. And supposed to get some more photos from some people here. They say they've got old game cam photos. But then, you know, people tell you, like, I got the best footage ever. I got the best pictures ever. And you're like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what did fool me, though, recently? Well, it didn't fool me, but I mean, I didn't dismiss it right away. I thought it very well could be real was that Banff video.
Oh, right. Yeah, that thing standing in the trees. And, you know, but that could be legit, but is there enough information to even tell? Well,
the guy got caught hoaxing the year before with a very similar
time. Okay, gotcha. All right. Yeah, I did see that was making the rounds, but I didn't think that there was anything much to say about it because a piece of fir in a tree just frankly isn't good enough.
No, but the rib bones and the spine from some kind of ungulate in the tree next to it, and then what appeared to be a young one grabbing the leg.
Yeah, man, I don't know. If it's not more obvious than it was, it kind of doesn't matter, you know? I had to tell somebody to shop that today, actually. This guy has a photograph of what he says is a Sasquatch down by, where is that? Detroit Lake. And I looked at it and it's like, maybe it's a Bigfoot, but I would say chances are it's probably something else, just, you know, statistically speaking. But, yeah, sure. Maybe it's a Bigfoot. There's no way to tell. And, you know, that's the truth of the vast majority of pictures because dumb old Roger and Bob, you know, stupid, sexy Roger and Bob got, you know, the bar set so high so early on. If it doesn't approach that level, what good is it?
Exactly.
Beyond just mild curiosity, you know.
I mean, but when it's someone we know like Bart or someone, you know, that got footage and we know they're for real, like they're not BSing us, we can learn something from the behavior of watching the videos since we know they're real, but for a skeptic scientist or something like that, or just the everyday person that doesn't think they're real, they'd get no value out of it whatsoever.
Right, right. Yeah, because they don't know these people and they don't know the character and all that other stuff. Why would they? Right. You know, and why would we expect them to?
Exactly.
It's good to get out of your subjective experience sometimes and look at things empirically. Like, you know what? They don't know me from Adam. Why would they believe me? And that's the level of evidence that frankly, we all need to try to obtain, where you don't necessarily need to know the context or the people involved. That always helps. That'll add to the veracity of the evidence, you know, that add to the authenticity of it all. But if you have something like a footprint cast, you can give it to somebody and don't tell them where it came from, and they would still be able to see things in it. If they had the knowledge about, you know, the foot structure, for example. I could bring any of these casts to a podiatrist and they would have something to say about it. Same is true of the Patterson-Gimlin film, that if you are familiar with anatomy and the muscle groups and, you know, movement of large animals, you would have something to say about it without knowing anything about Roger or Bob. That's where we all need to be aiming at this point, I think, for evidence.
I agree. Yeah, Cliff, you sent me that photo this week of what could be a knuckle print. Did you find anything else out when you cast it?
Yeah, you know what? I actually opted against casting it because when I got there and started investigating the scene, there were deer prints in the area. So what I believe I was looking at was a composite of a number of deer prints because that was the only other thing in the area, like immediate area within 10 feet of it. So I'm inclined to think that that's what it was. And it was in pea gravel and stuff like that. It would have made a terrible cast of what I think are deer prints, unfortunately. So I didn't cast that. But, you know, to back up a little bit, to tell everybody what's been going on, actually, it's been a very active week for me in general. Starting at last Saturday, and for anybody listening, we're recording this on a Thursday night. Was it last Saturday? It was. Yeah, last Saturday, actually, thinking about it, must have been a magical day somehow, you know. So that was on the 4th, January 4th. All sorts of stuff happened, and it's only now just kind of coming all together for me. The first thing that happened is that I get a text from this guy I know that lives up on Lolo Pass Road. Now, Lolo Pass Road is on the way to Mount Hood, It's actually much, it's 1700 foot elevation. It's higher than where I am. So it's a lot closer to the mountain than me. It takes about 20 minutes for me to drive up in there. And it goes up to Lost Lake, which is right above Bull Run Watershed. And there's been a slew of sightings up there. Mike Leone, our good friend Mike Leone, he saw one of these things up there on that road. There's been a handful of other reports. On June 29th in 2019, a gentleman who comes in the shop saw Sasquatch there at this place up there on Lolo Pass Road in these campground areas. Just really active. So this guy calls me and says, hey, my girlfriend found this in the ground and sends me a really nice picture of what looks like a footprint. I go, oh, man. So I text him back, hey, when can I get out there? He goes, oh, tonight or tomorrow. And I look at the weather, and it's supposed to start dumping in a couple hours. And this is on Saturday night. I said, oh, man, okay, well, I better get out there tonight, right? So I throw all my stuff in the car, you know, plaster, you know, scale item. I got my therm. I got my night vision. And I haul ass up there like at 10 o'clock at night, 10:20 at night or something, because, you know, these things can't wait, frankly. So I get up there and he takes me out on the trail and it's in sand. It's right next to the Sandy River. And I get there and I'm looking at it. And I eventually determined that at first I thought, oh, that's not a big footprint like it looked like in the picture. Cause it was like in moss, you know? You know how like on riverbanks, very often a thin layer of moss grows over the sand. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. I was looking at it, and in the picture, there are demarcations in the moss that suggested a heel and an outline of a foot with these toe impressions, like five toes in front. But when I got there, it turns out that the what I thought was a heel and the outside of the foot was just – they were just due to lines in the moss. But the toes looked okay. But when I looked at it, they weren't rounded toes. They were actually kind of V-shape impressions. So I looked more closely, and at first I thought it was a deer, you know, scraping through the moss, maybe trying to get at some minerals or something under the moss. But then the more I looked at it, the more I realized it was actually a bear doing that same thing. Maybe not going after minerals, but going after bugs or whatever it was doing, you know, because when I looked at the context of the area, there were a number of these patches of moss that had similar claw marks near them that had been turned over. And these moss patches were perhaps 10 inches by 6 inches or 8 inches by, you know, 9 inches and all that sort of stuff, like a front bear paw, basically. So, so unfortunately that turned out to be nothing. So fast forward a bit. So I go home, we walk around a bit. I go home. It's no big deal. And I don't mind, you know, this guy's apologizing to me for bringing me out, but I'm thinking, why would you apologize? You have to chase down 100 of these to get one good thing. And I got one more bad one out of the way. This is great.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Bigfoot and Beyond. If you liked what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes. Subscribe to Bigfoot and Beyond wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Bigfoot and Beyond Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Bigfoot and Beyond, that's an N in the middle, and tweet us your thoughts and questions with the hashtag Bigfoot and Beyond.